Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll talk about the software and apps that exist to help children with their learning. We'll hear from Vodafone Ireland about their 10 million euro investment in customer service and the role that AI is playing in helping consumers. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. I want to start this week with education, because last week on the Pat Kenny Show, I was answering tech questions as I always do on a Tuesday, and somebody asked for recommendations for apps or software to support their child with their learning. Now, after that, I was inundated with emails from parents looking for recommendations. And while I do have some, I thought it was probably better to get on to an expert who can talk us through what is out there, what is helpful, and where to turn if you need further help. Rosie Bissett is the CEO of Dyslexia Ireland, and she joins me now. Rosie, it's great to talk with you. As I mentioned there, a text came into the Pat Kenny Show last week looking for advice in relation to software or apps to support their child who has some difficulties when it comes to learning. Now, it wasn't very clear in terms of what aspects they are finding challenging and where they need support, but I have been inundated with emails from parents over the last 10 days looking for more information, whether that is with numeracy, literacy, focus. There's a broad spectrum of issues that people need support. But I'm wondering if you might just be able to guide us through where we are in 2025 when it comes to accessibility tech. Because I remember when I was in school, it was all very niche, very specialised, and indeed very expensive.
It was indeed, and things have moved on dramatically since then. In fact, we're in a place now where I think there's an awful lot of fantastic accessibility tool that is actually available to us free. It's in our pocket, in our phone, it's on our tablets, on our laptops. I think the issue now is sometimes we are so overburdened with information that sometimes we don't realise those features and functions are there. So, for example, things like on all your devices, pretty much now every device will have a text-to-speech function tool within it, you know, whether it's your mobile or your Chromebook, your iPad, your laptop, so that you can listen to the text being read to you. So if you have a challenge accessing text, or let's say, for example, you're dyslexic, your reading is reasonably okay, but perhaps you're a slow reader and you have to read a lot of textbooks, we'll say, you know, going into second level or third level, that actually having it read to you by a device can really speed up your access to information. So there's inbuilt tools then in terms of writing. Obviously, we have things now like voice dictation. We know, I suppose we're all used to getting voice notes. Some people love them, some people don't. But we can also do voice dictation, you know, dictate it, and then it will type your text for you. We have predictive text. We have much more advanced spell checkers. We have voice to text software where we can, in fact, dictate, you know, a whole essay. Potentially even do an exam that way. We have so many tools, even things you mentioned, focus. So there are tools where you can kind of block out distractions. You can turn on a focus mode so you're not getting interrupted, we'll say, by notifications from social media, things like that. One of the challenges with tech is that it's so vast almost, with so many options there, is that it can be to find a that sort of safe, distraction-free window when you're trying to use it for learning or work is sometimes tricky. But yeah, there are tools like, you know, focus mode or things like immersive reader, you know, where you can cut out the clutter and the banners on the side of a web page that you're reading, for example, to make it easier to access.
Yeah, and it is fantastic that all of those options are there. I use the focus modes for when I'm in work just to stop getting the ping of notifications and getting the tech deciding where I spend my time and my attention. I take control by putting the different focus modes in place. But let's scrape it right back. So say, for example, a parent has an iPad or a phone that their child uses for whether it is reading, homework, or even just, you know, to enjoy themselves on, which is completely fine. How and where do you find the accessibility options? Because if you've never looked for them, you won't know.
You won't know, exactly. And I suppose where it gets a little bit tricky is that obviously depending on the device, whether it's, you know, Apple, Android, etc., there can be slight differences. But generally speaking, you're going into the sort of general settings area, and then you're looking for the accessibility tools. And then within that, you'll generally find a huge array of things that you can, you know, turn on, try out with various options around, as I say, reading support, writing support, around things even like, let's say, visual support. So, for example, if you want to play around with size of text, colours, you know, the visual look of it as well, if that's an issue for someone. What we do have, which might be helpful for people, is on one of our websites, which is dyslexiahub.ie, we have a technology section there which has a whole series of videos to literally visually guide you through the basics of turning on those accessibility tools in, you know, an Apple iOS device, in an Android, you know, phone or tablet, in Google, on Microsoft. And then what I would say as well, a lot of it is what's really great, and I suppose where the summer can sometimes be good around this, or maybe for parents at home, it's take a little bit of time to turn things on and try it out and play with it and play with the feature for a while. One of the things with tech, and I suppose with dyslexia, neurodiversity, you know, accessibility, every user is different, you know, so some tools will suit some people better than others, or there will be a time or because of a requirement for, you know, the piece of work that you're doing for school or the project for work, that a piece of the tech tool will be really helpful. And there will be another time where actually it might annoy you and frustrate you, so you don't want it on. So I think trialing and playing around with the features within your devices and then having a look at, okay, this one works really well for me, so I'm going to use that all the time. This one I don't like, it's not really helping me. There may be other ones that you then use periodically, like you say, with focus mode or things like that. You use them sometimes, but not always. So it's a lot around, it's exploring what's there, and then seeing what works for you. And also remembering that what works for you now may not be what you need in a month's time or a week's time or an hour's time. So I suppose it's quite fluid, I think. It's what your needs are at a given moment will dictate maybe the type of tools you're looking at that time.
And that's why it's great to start with the accessibility options that come as standard now on every device. So as you said, whether it is iOS or Android or Windows, these are already there. And that means you can test them out. And if you don't like them, or if they don't work for you or for your child, you can disable them and you haven't spent an extra cent. So I've just opened the accessibility options on my Android phone. And so, for example, under the screen reader heading, I have TalkBack, so I can get items spoken aloud. I can change the display size and text, the color and motion, the magnification, the select to speak, a simple view. There's a whole array. And that's before we get into you know, live captions, live transcribe. There's a myriad of things there. But if we focus on children who are in primary school, so let's say primarily between 8 and 12, like, for example, one of the emails that came into techtalk@newstalk.com was from a parent who said that their child is 10. They completed an assessment in school and were told that they have mild dyslexia. And unfortunately, it's not severe enough to qualify for supports within the school. They're now concerned that their child will fall further behind. Where do they begin? That is a very heavy weight, I suppose, to sit on the shoulders of a parent.
It is, and it's quite common, particularly for kids who fall into that category of being, you know, while they're clearly dyslexic, they're not quite, as it were, significantly dyslexic enough to qualify for additional teaching support. Having said that, you know, every teacher in a school is responsible for supporting young people with dyslexia and other neurodivergent profiles. So even in the classroom, the regular classroom, even if the child is not going to learn it to, maybe they don't qualify to go to the learning support or the SCT teacher, but even in the regular classroom, I think there's a lot that a classroom teacher can do in terms of, you know, being aware, being understanding, differentiating the work that they're doing in the classroom. So it's important to note that. But obviously, if parents can, it's access, you know, accessing support outside of school can be very helpful, and support that they can help with the child at home. And I suppose you're looking at it from two avenues. You're looking at, with, let's say, a primary age child that you're talking about there, you can look at technologies that can help address and support the learning of literacy. Okay, so for example, let's say Nessie is a company that has a range of apps for different ages, different stages on the literacy journey. So ones you can get on your phone or your iPad, but also ones on a laptop, which can support the child in their learning of literacy. So right from the very beginnings, with letters and sounds and phonics, and moving that up as the child is progressing through levels. So programs like the programs and apps that Nessie has, some of the apps are called like Hairy Letters, Hairy Words. They also actually have a Hairy Numbers, because you mentioned maths there as well. They're nice supportive tools. They're also, apps can be, I suppose, fun and engaging. They can be colourful. If they're designed well, they're very structured. You're doing small chunks of work. So they're often really good for repetition and overlearning, which we know for kids with dyslexia, dyscalculia, they need a lot more practice opportunities to learn and solidify, be it new words, new sounds, new spellings, new maths skills. So little and often is kind of one thing to remember. And that's where, you know, a small amount of time, you know, 10, 15 minutes, we'll say, on an app, you know, working through and practicing sounds and practicing word reading, spelling, you know, with a good program that's quite structured, can be very helpful. And also it can be, if they're well designed, they can be fun and colourful, you know, quirky little characters, engaging for children. I know, I suppose, from a parent's point of view, helping kids after school can be really tough. You know, the kids are tired coming home, you're stressed, homework is stressful. So then if you're adding something additional on top, albeit for the best of reasons, to help develop and support their literacy skills, it's trying to find that balance between something that's proportional, you know, enough but not too much, you know, that it ends up, you know, kind of turning the kid off, I suppose, because you're doing too much with them. But also it gets away from the maybe having that third party almost, you know, helping the child. So you can, you know, maybe sit with the child. Maybe if they get a little bit older, you know, mum and dad don't have to sit beside them or be on top of them while they're doing it. They can be doing it independently. There's often gamification built in, as you'll know, which obviously can really help with kind of motivating kids. So they're working through levels or picking up stars and things like that. All of those little tools and tricks can be just, I suppose, a nice way to do supportive additional reinforcement work to help develop those kind of sort of core literacy skills for kids with dyslexia.
Yeah, as you said, there is such a broad selection of apps out there. I follow Kira Riley on Instagram and I find that she is an excellent resource and advocate and spokesperson for a lot of members of this community, but also for teachers as well. And one thing that I've noted from Kira's Instagram is that there are certain apps that she would recommend. And when I go in to my own Play Store, for whether it's my nieces or my nephews or whomever, there's such a long list of apps that are there. Is there an obvious way to distinguish something that's educationally beneficial to a child? Because obviously, as a non-teacher, I don't know. And as someone who doesn't have the half the knowledge of what Kira has, I don't know how to distinguish what looks cute but is actually useless, or looks cute and is very beneficial.
Yeah, it's a really good question, Jess. And unfortunately, it's a really, I'd love to be able to give you a really easy, simple answer to that. You do need to, I suppose, go and get advice from people who know what they're talking about, you know. So whether it's, you know, coming to ourselves and the Dyslexia Association or some of the, you know, the other, let's say, neurodiversity organizations, whether it's going to trusted, you know, kind of education experts, you know, to get clear guidance. There is an organization actually in Scotland called Call Scotland, and they have a lot of advice and guidance and sort of rate looking at apps across a whole range of different sort of inclusion areas, you know, so be it dyslexia, dyscalculia, general inclusion, visual impairment, communication needs, etc. So they help to narrow down, I would say, your focus, because you're right, if you go in the App Store or the Android equivalent, you will find hundreds and hundreds of things on there. So I think a bit of advice from a good source is worth its weight in gold, definitely. And also with a lot of the apps now, you'll get a free starter, you know, so never pay for anything straight away. Okay. Like, get a freebie and try it out. Okay. Another one to be aware of is that some of the libraries actually there's a small number of tech programs that they make available for individuals with sort of access needs. So, for example, there's a program called Touch Type Read Spell, which is a program which is both learning how to type, but also practicing spelling in a sort of a structured way using word lists. So you're kind of learning spellings while also learning how to type. There's another one called Lexia. So it's worth going to your local library and asking, what programs do they have that you might be able to access for free? You might be able to, for parents, again, if finance is an issue, talk to the school and see, is there anything that you can, you know, get a home link for? So particularly if you can mirror, if they're using a program in school, that you're mirroring at home. Okay, that's kind of important as well in terms of not overloading the child or having too many different programs that they're expected to use at the one time as well.
Okay, that's excellent advice. I didn't know that about the library. So that is excellent to know. This is a stupid question, so forgive me. But I sometimes use the likes of Grammarly built in to my email to help me with my spelling and my punctuation and my grammar. And I do that just sometimes because sometimes I'm sending 15 emails in half a minute and I'm not fully paying attention, which is not great, but I find it useful. Is a program like Grammarly recommended to somebody who's perhaps at second level and they are using computers? Like, is tech the solution, and is spell check a solution and a help to somebody with dyslexia? Or is that, you know, putting a band-aid over a bigger issue?
Okay. Yeah, I hear your point. I suppose in a way it can and is both. And it depends on coming at it pragmatically around where the individual is. Okay. So when, and also thinking about, I think one of the things I always would say to whether it's parents or teachers is think about what is the purpose of the activity. Okay. If the purpose of the activity is, okay, we're learning spellings, then using something like Grammarly is not actually, in that case, it's not helping because it's taking you away from it. Mm. If the purpose of the activity is to write a history essay for your junior cert class, okay, then I would say, from my point of view, absolutely using, it's not about your spelling, okay? It is about you being able to communicate your knowledge, to structure that, present that, and then a program like Grammarly or Ginger or another, you know, advanced spell checker will just help to get past and speed up that issue of and not getting bogged down with the spelling errors. So one of the issues that sometimes individuals with dyslexia have, and this is whether you're handwriting or on text, is if you're not sure how to spell a word, you can lose a lot of time trying to think, trying to work out what it is, or then maybe you go and you rewrite your sentence so that you can use a different word, or you get really distracted also visually by when the lovely little wiggly red line pops up under the words that you know it's wrong, and you're instantly distracted and your focus shifts from, you know, the sentence you're about to complete or the next sentence to, oh, I've gone wrong, what's that word? So those tools, I think, are incredibly supportive. So aside from where the activity is about, where accuracy in spelling is the purpose of the activity, then I would say using those tools as a workaround is really sensible. And as you say, you, me, so many of our team, so many people I know, dyslexic and non-dyslexic as well, I would say that there's far more non-dyslexic probably using and benefiting from an awful lot of this technology, like Grammarly, you know, the read aloud function on the phone. I use that loads myself if I'm in the car, and you can have listen to something while you're driving or whatever as well, you know. So a lot of that technology is technology that's really supportive for lots of us in different tasks that we're doing. And for parents as well, this also means that actually if your kid sees you using those tools, it makes them realize that, hang on, this is something that's just a cool function, a cool app, and everyone can use it. One of the things we would have seen a lot in the past, as you said, when tech was seen, when assistive tech was seen as this really fancy, expensive add-on, you know, band-aid kind of specialist thing, is that a lot of kids didn't want to use it because it really made you look really different. It's like, why are you using that program? What's that? What's that about? You know, it was really strange. So actually, technology and inclusion, accessibility technology becoming so normalized and used by everyone actually really not only levels the playing field, but actually makes it so acceptable for everyone to use it in lots of different environments. So like it's I think for kids who maybe are sometimes nervous about being seen to be different, particularly maybe that late primary, early, you know, junior cycle sort of phase, the more they see and hear, you know, particularly other kids using it or significant adults, and I would say both parents and particularly teachers. I think it's fabulous if teachers can, you know, go into a classroom and share, you know, these kind of tools and say that they're using them as well. You know, it really just normalizes the use of this kind of technology.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you made that point, because this technology exists. Obviously, it is incredibly beneficial to those who need it, but it's also massively beneficial to those who use it, regardless of whether they need to or not. As I mentioned, I use Grammarly sometimes because it helps me speed up my work. I use the text-to-speech sometimes. There's a whole suite of features that I utilize because it helps me in my day-to-day life. And I think the normalization of that benefits everybody, as well as helping you to be more productive and get more done. And the other point that I would make here, and this is something that I wish I knew when I was in school, but unfortunately I've only learned it in the last, well, since I became an adult, but everybody learns in different ways, regardless of whether you have a diagnosis or not, whether you have additional needs or not. Some people are visual learners, some people learn by doing, some people learn by reading a book. And we just need to accept that, like, you could have 100 people and every single one of them will have a little quirk, something that's a little bit different. And we just need to normalize it and say, that's the way you are. Cool. That's it.
Absolutely. It's I think the word that always comes to my mind is it's flexibility. We need to be flexible that everyone is different. We all have, as you say, different learning preferences, or depending on the environment or the time, you know, these tools will bring real, you know, benefits and accessibility to so many people, you know. So it's, yeah, let's take advantage of them, you know, and let's not be afraid of them. You know, I know we haven't mentioned the dreaded AI, but like AI, yes, I know there's the existential fear, you know, about aspects of it. But at the same time, AI has huge accessibility functions, you know, for someone, you know. It's obviously challenging in an education environment, and certainly I know the teachers' unions have huge concerns around it with, you know, continuous assessment and assignments, project work and things like that. But let's say from a work point of view, or, you know, you're producing a project to help get you started, to help, you know, let's say you don't have Grammarly, you know, write your bit of text, put it into ChatGPT and ask it to, you know, check the spelling for you, or, you know, reduce your word count. Word counts used to be in college, I think, one of the banes of my life, you know, and usually I'd written too much. So then trying to reduce it down to the correct number of words that was required for an assignment used to be an awfully tedious process, literally going line by line through it, we'll say. Whereas with ChatGPT, you can have written completely your own work and then use, for example, AI to just say, okay, shorten this essay to 4,000 words, you know? Yeah, so many opportunities. And I'm sure in a week, in a month, in a year, there's going to be all kinds of new things because it's so, as you know, Jess, so evolving, literally minute by minute, in terms of the potential and what can be done and what's available.
Yeah. And it's an exciting time. And this is why I'm delighted to have you on the show and why we're talking about it, is to remind everybody that there are supports and tools out there, some of which are provided by the state, some of which will cost you money, some of which are completely free. But there is help out there. You just need to know where to look for it. But as Rosie said there, the website is dyslexiahub.ie. And there's a section there and it's genuinely called Empowering Parents. So if you are a parent and you're looking for a starting point, I would recommend that. Or as always, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. But for the moment, Rosie, thank you so much for joining me here on Newstalk.
Thanks, Jess. Lovely to chat.
Yeah, that was Rosie Bissett of Dyslexia Ireland. As always, if you have any recommendations to add into the mix, do email me techtalk@newstalk.com and I will share them on the show next week. Now, when we come back here on News Talk, we're going to chat with Vodafone Ireland about its €10 million investment in customer care.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Before the break, we were chatting with Rosie Bissett of Dyslexia Ireland. I just wanted to give that website again if you are looking for supports and resources as a parent. It's dyslexiahub.ie. They have fantastic resources, so you will find all of the information there. Now, Vodafone Ireland has revealed a €10 million investment in customer care over a 3-year period. That is a significant amount of money. And I'm joined now by Kieran Barrett of Vodafone Ireland. He is the Commercial Operations Director to talk through it. Kieran, just explain where this money is going, because that's obviously a huge chunk of change. Why now, and what areas did that money go into?
Yeah, so I guess what we've identified is that the customer service space is really evolving very quickly. And it's a space where AI is already playing a big part in terms of use cases and possibilities. And I guess the contrast I paint is, if you think back only 5 years ago, I think most businesses were operating their customer operations in a very traditional sense, in terms of receiving calls, having agents available to receive and handle them. And by its nature, this means there's a variability in terms of received contact volume and, of course, available advisors, which drives a certain volatility. So what we've done here in Vodafone is we try to embrace some of these new AI and technology opportunities to make, firstly, our customers, and secondly, our agent teams experience better and easier. So in recent years, as you say, we've invested significantly to make this happen. And it's across a range of different initiatives. So for example, we identified that we needed to improve our customer listening and understanding. So we invested in areas like speech analytics, which converts voice to text, data modeling, and all with the ambition to really better understand why our customers are contacting us, what's behind it. And I guess most importantly, are we improving in terms of some of the investments that we're making? So I guess the other big one investment from our perspective was the introduction of Toby, which is our AI digital assistant. And that's available when customers contact us either via chat and voice. And what it helps us do is deliver almost a personalized and predictive customer experience. And I guess having been enrolled 4 or 5 years at this stage, one of the big insights is that a lot of customer queries, about 60 to 70% of them, are really straightforward and simple. Customers are looking for clarification, they're looking for reassurance and the basic information, and that's where Toby really comes into its own. It allows customers self-serve. There's no need to talk to anyone. And I guess they can now do that 24/7 as well with instant and accurate and, sorry, consistent and accurate responses. So, and there's lots of great examples that we have, like simple things like customers checking whether they're eligible for upgrades, looking for phone unlock codes, and roaming, of course, because by its nature, customers are looking to find out before they travel what they can do, the likely costs, how they can optimize, etc. But I guess always alongside this, and we've been very conscious of it, that it's not 100% outcome with Toby. It has a role to play, but there's lots of other supports that are needed to make, I suppose, that really rounded customer experience. For example, we've invested in our front line. We have the longest opening hours, and we've really invested in trying to keep our availability to within 30 seconds once you contact us. And of course, we have retail across every town willing and able to help our customers. So it really depends on the customer in terms of the nature of the question and above all, what suits the customer. But I guess the final piece on that I would really highlight is the role it can play in terms of helping our agents. Like, this was one of our big learnings, was just in terms of how it can create time and drive better resolution for our teams. And it's amazing just how pervasive it can be, like removing what I would call mundane activities from our agents. Things like validating customers, taking notes after calls, prompting our teams around particular resolution types because we know that the journey the customers come through on Toby, and it helps us with timely quality and coaching intervention where we can see a poor outcome that we're advising our agents on how better to handle that the next time. So it allows our frontline then, of course, to concentrate on what's important, which is listening, showing empathy, and resolving the customer query. So I think, as you say, it's a significant investment, but it's based on lots of key initiatives to ultimately drive our customer and frontline experience.
Yeah, and I suppose you've hit on quite a lot there in terms of the different offerings and the different reasoning behind it. And I want to delve a little bit deeper into that, because over the last number of years, Vodafone is one of the most iconic of the mobile networks. Everybody knows the logo. You've been around a long time. You've got massive reach, not only in this country, but also around the world. But we also saw the emergence of digital mobile networks in the last number of years. And they kind of put forward a different model in terms of not having a physical store presence, not having telephone customer care, everything being done via a website. Despite being one of the big guys, did you guys look at that and see that there was potential and also customer willingness to interact in a different way when it comes to customer service?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, as you say, the connectivity solutions we provide for our customers, they're kind of at the heart of every, what we call day-to-day, our customers' day-to-day lives across Irish households and business and, of course, government services. So, yeah, and all facets of life are fueled by it, I guess, whether it's work, leisure, education, and entertainment. And we wanted to be there for customers when they need us most. And you're right, there will be different, I guess, service requirements depending on what that customer need is. As you say, some customers will be happy to self-serve. Others will require someone at the end of a phone or at the end of a chat line to help them. And it really is around customizing it for that customer need. Mm-hmm. And even as you rightly point out, in terms of our market leading position, that means we are across an awful lot of different segment types, both in terms of consumer and business. So it isn't, I wouldn't say it's a one size fits for all, but there are definite segments that have those, I'd say, deeper customer requirements. And I suppose it is critical to what we do. Being available and supporting our customers is core to everything we do, alongside our market leading network, connectivity solutions. So we have to be there for our customers when they need us most, through whatever means they want.
Mm. And can you analyze and identify the trends. So for example, if you have a huge cohort of people just looking to see if they have an upgrade, you know that that service is being fulfilled by whether it is the automation or the other services that you've outlined. But are there still other genuine queries and cases that are coming in that still require the human touch, the human brain and the human legs to do the investigation?
Yeah, yes. Yes is the quick answer. And that's, you know, we obviously have very deep insights in terms of what our customer experience looks, particularly, I guess, both from a Toby and agent perspective. So as you say, we can see the journeys that are best suited to self-serve. They tend to be information seeking, clarifications, etc. But there is still a cohort of contacts that absolutely need an advisor. Typically in the tech space, if I'm honest, you know, we operate in a very complex environment there in terms of the number of wholesalers, infrastructure, etc. So it's very hard to, I would guess, automate some of that space. So particularly on the tech side, yeah, there's still a big dependency on our frontline. But we can review all those journeys. We can understand which ones are working well, not so well. And of course, fast track our customers to agents once they've presented the type of query that they're offering.
We were chatting to Aer Lingus on the show last week about their new app and the way tech has been embraced in the air travel world. And one of the questions that came up along the way was, not everybody is tech literate. Not everybody is confident when it comes to engaging with technology. How do you guys go about ensuring that there is still that balance? Because I remember years ago, this is a long time ago now, but I had an issue with my old mobile network that's no longer in existence. And I spent about 40 minutes pressing 1 on an automated menu, pressing 7 on an automated menu, pressing 3 on an automated menu, and getting absolutely frustrated to bits. So it's not the most seamless, or it wasn't the most seamless experience for customers. So how do you balance those who aren't tech literate with this amazing technology, but also ensuring that the customer doesn't walk away frustrated and without their situation being resolved?
Yeah, and it's a very fair concern. I guess we have built this capability over time. So we've learned as we've gone. And you can quickly identify customers, as you say, that end down rabbit holes, get confused, or simply don't want to engage in self-service. So we have lots of prompts that allow those customers get through to an agent. And I think that's been the critical balance we've been trying to strike, making sure self-service is available for those customers. But equally, it's not for everyone, as you say, and giving customers that opportunity to get to an agent as quick as they can. And I guess you're citing lots of examples there in terms of how it can get quite confusing. But we've been building this slowly, learning, identifying where we have blockers and making sure we're facilitating, I guess, our customers to get to the solution they want to as quick as they can. And you're like, obviously, we can profile our customers. We can understand where repeat calls are coming and facilitate them getting to an agent as quick as we can. Ultimately, our job is to resolve that customer query. And as you say, putting them in any kind of a spin or looping, etc., isn't good for us or our customer. So we're always, I suppose, trying to optimize that journey to make sure, whether it's self-serve you're looking for or an agent, that you can get that solution.
I want to talk about Toby again briefly. Is this a solution that was built in-house at Vodafone, or is this something that you bought off the shelf and kind of tweaked?
So Toby's available across many of the Vodafone opcos. Obviously, we needed to understand how that would work in an Irish context, and I guess build up our knowledge and insights around it. So yeah, the capability is part of Vodafone, but obviously we spent an awful lot of time localizing that and making sure it works for our customers.
And what did that entail? Is it, you know, small things like, you know, Irish people would say grand. So the phone is working grand, but, you know, this, that and the other. Is it that type of thing? Or is it more, you know, how it looks and how you click through and that kind of thing?
Yeah, in truth, the ways of working we would have been able to avail of centrally. So it was really about building out our journeys. building them out slowly and consistently, learning as we went. And we have a local team of over 100 people that would be involved in really understanding what those customer flows look like. And as you say, there's Irishisms that go with this. We recently conducted some research, just having a bit of fun with what people find easier or not so easy to understand. And as you say, phrases like banjacks, acting the maggot, etc., are more difficult than grand and other, I suppose, simpler ones to understand. And that's been the job of the team, to really understand how customers present these queries. And we all, as you, we are all that bit different and coming from different parts of the country. So yeah, that's been the, some of the job has been really trying to understand what customers have been asking us for.
And we know that every year there's, you know, whether it's the CCPC or different bodies will put stats out there and reports out there over customer satisfaction, customer complaints and all the rest. And a number of years ago, telcos featured quite highly because of customer service or the lack thereof, other telcos. How, I suppose, when you look to the future, do you see human operators, human customer support staff always being a part of this journey? Or do you see it phasing where Toby could take the bulk of it, I suppose?
Yeah, so, yeah, I think we're in a space now where it's small incremental gains. I don't think we'll be forcing it, as you say, to be a completely self-serve, Toby-led operation. We need to continue to find that balance. There's, as you say, cohorts of customers that will always want to talk to an agent. There'll be query types that always lend themselves to an agent. So we don't have a burning ambition to get to a full self-care model. I think we've got the right blend now. It will continue to evolve as data sets improve, as profiling opportunities improve, customer needs will change. But I guess there's an underlying piece as well, which is helping our overall operation, which is the fundamentals of our day-to-day experience of our customers are changing. Like if you think 5-10 years ago, you know, we were largely operating on a non-fiber basis for our customers, but now 80% of them have fiber, which again gives rise to better speeds, less faults, and so less reasons to contact them. The same on the mobile network side. So our portfolio, our connectivity offering, etc., as they improve, I think we'll be giving customers less and less reasons to contact, which I guess is paramount. We want to reduce the need for customers to contact us, but equally, when they do have to, that we're giving them, I guess, the model that serves them best.
Yeah. Well, it is, as I said, it's a fantastic 10 million euro investment over a 3-year period. And the prominence of Toby, the fact that it can interact in your local dialect. So if you want to describe your phone or whatever it is as banjaxed or acting the maggot, it'll get what you're trying to say. Ciarán, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thank you.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Right, before we get to John, let's answer some of your tech questions. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. And I do the Instagram Q&A. I did my first one in a while during the week. So keep an eye out for that if you've got any questions that arise or spring to mind. And if you're an Instagram user. Right. First question this week is from Sinead, who says, I have an A53, so a Samsung A53. And I'm wondering if the Samsung A55 or the Samsung S23 FE would be better to upgrade to. All I'm looking for is better speed, good battery life, and maybe a better camera. Right. So you've got plenty to kind of consider here, right? The A range, I honestly think, is great. When I'm pulling up the spec of the two phones here side by side. So the S23 FE, so the FE stands for the Fan Edition. It's basically the little sister of the S range. So it is a lighter phone. It's also a smaller screen. So the A55 has a 6.6-inch screen and the S23 FE has a 6.4 screen. Not a dramatic difference, but there is a difference. The battery life on the A55 is bigger. So you get a 5,000 milliamp battery versus 4,500 milliamp battery on the S23. So the battery wins out again on the A55. You also have excellent cameras. You have excellent internals. The both are kind of similar enough. the sort of benchmark tests that have been done, like, I don't think you'd be disappointed with either. The camera comparison, they're quite similar. I do think, again, you'd kind of be splitting hairs to try and find differences. A lot of people really like the S23 FE. I think if it was me, in terms of giving you value for money and also the affordability side of things as well, I think I would go with the A55. It looks gorgeous. There's a better battery life. There's nice speakers. The display on it is gorgeous. It ticks so many of the boxes. Yeah, my gut says A55, so I would recommend the A55. But I'll be completely honest with you, they're both excellent phones, so I don't think you'd be disappointed regardless of what you go with. Our final question for this week is from Anna. And Anna, I'm obsessed with the detail. I just love you. This is the exact type of question that I live for, Anna. So thank you for it. You said, I have an iPad Air, which is approximately 8.5 years old. Incredible. You're now unable to access the following: the Irish Times app, the Bank of Ireland app, Bridge Base Online app, Netflix app. I guess I need to purchase a new one. I'm considering the offer in Harvey Norman for €379 for an iPad Air 2021 64 gig. Do you think this would meet my needs? Thank you so much. I appreciate your help. Yes, Anna, it would. All of the apps that you've mentioned there, I assume that's the primary reason that you want the tablets for those apps, which is why you've mentioned them. So yes, the iPad Air will do that. And the 64 gig, that's not a huge amount of storage, but it's still sufficient for the major, like for everything that you've mentioned there. It's absolutely perfect. The only time I'd recommend getting a bigger memory, so you said this, that the one on offer in Harvey Norman is 64 gigs. The only time I would say it would be a good idea to get more storage than that is if you were, you know, going to download hours worth of movies from Netflix. So say if you had a flight from here to Australia and you had to download all of the files to keep you entertained on that flight, 64 gigs might struggle. But for all of the apps that you've just mentioned there, for day-to-day use, for doing your emails, for maybe reading the newspapers, whatever it might be, yes, absolutely. And 379 is a good price. As you've said there, your iPad Air is 8.5 years old. That's incredibly good going. So yes, I would take up that offer, €379 for an iPad Air. I absolutely love the iPad Air. I would highly recommend it. So yes, go for it and let me know how you get on. That's it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. I'm bringing you the show from San Francisco next week. I'm heading over because Salesforce is hosting its Dreamforce conference. It is bringing together a whole host of people from a whole host of countries to talk through the next iteration of the company, talking about how they're using artificial intelligence. We're going to go behind the scenes at the conference, talk to all of the key players. I'm also going to bring you out and about around San Francisco as well. We're going to hear how the town is faring post all of the tech job cuts. Elon Musk is closing the X office in San Francisco as I speak. So there's a lot of change happening in that tech city, and I will bring you all of the good stuff throughout the week. But I will be back with Shane and Kira on Monday's News Talk Breakfast. So in the meantime, have a good weekend.